Later in the morning, we have our children's program. And I was asked to come and help with it today a little bit. And I was told that the topic for the children's program is happiness. So then I thought, oh, it'd be nice to give a talk on happiness here for all of you, since that's a topic later, right? I mean, why should it just be for the kids? So I decided to do that by talking about conflict. And the connection between happiness and conflict has to do with a meeting I went to at the San Francisco Zen Center on Thursday. And the person who's co-chair of the Zen Center Ethics Council, the AIR Council, gave a little presentation. And he was talking about how much he's learned and been inspired by someone who's very much involved with the Zen Center Ethics Committee, who does this kind of work professionally, I think, kind of ethics, mediation kind of work, conflict resolution. And he was very surprised by her and inspired because conflict makes her happy. And he'd never encountered anybody like that. I mean, he's kind of in charge of, helping with the ethics at Zen Center and conflict. But he's a little bit conflict averse of himself. And, he's kind of like, it's just something you have to take care of, and he feels very responsible. But it never occurred to him that conflict was something you can make you happy. And here's this woman, she hears about conflict and she says, oh, yeah, there it is. And so he talked a little bit about her views and what it is that makes her happy and how that's really inspired him. And then now this woman and someone else is going to come into Zen Center. They're trying to come in to do a 2-year program for Zen Center to help Zen Center as a culture deal better with conflict, kind of from the top down and up from the bottom up thoroughly, kind of so that as people at Zen Center have some sense of that, at least maybe not that conflict that doesn't have to make them happy, but at least they see the importance and the possibility inherent in conflict and the importance of have a culture that's in place that kind of embraces the idea of stopping for conflict, looking at it, working with it, rather than avoiding it. And what he pointed out was the Zen Center, in his view, is very good at the interpersonal. It's a kind of meditation tradition in some ways, and so that people go in themselves and look at themselves and learn how to let go and work with their own fears and different things. But the Zen Center community was not so good at the interpersonal level, talking with each other and working out conflict. And so this woman who's happy with conflict is going to come in and hopefully happify Zen Center. So that's a connection in me from my talking about conflict. Many of you know that one of the first important truths of Buddhism, called the First Noble Truth, is the truth about suffering, that there is suffering. And in talking about this first truth, the Buddha said that it's very important, or the task that's at hand with suffering, is to understand it, which can be translated means stopping for it long enough to see it and listen to it and really understand it, be present for it. And now in stating the First Noble Truth, there is suffering, there is no pronoun in that word. It doesn't say, you are suffering, or those people over there are suffering. It just says there is suffering. And I'm very fond of this fact because when the instructions are kind of stop for suffering, get to know it, pay attention to it, it doesn't matter where it's occurring, whether it's within oneself or it's outside. Suffering, wherever it occurs, becomes a place for practice, for spiritual practice for Buddhists. The follow-up of the First Noble Truth is that by stopping the suffering, it's possible to understand it deeply enough that it's possible to let go of the causes of suffering. And in doing that, experience happiness or release or freedom. So it's kind of the good news. And the way to the good news is through paying attention to suffering. In my experience of kind of being around different cultures, different societies, different groups of people, I've noticed that there are groups of people sometimes, or styles of people, that, and sometimes whole cultures are characterized this way, maybe it's going too far, but they have different attitudes towards conflict. And there are some people, some communities, that seem to be very much focused on harmony, the importance of harmony, and harmony at all costs sometimes, and harmony at the expense of conflict. If there's conflict, you push it aside, you ignore it. And you find that sometimes in Buddhist culture, that kind of emphasis on harmony is more important than kind of highlighting the conflict. And sometimes in the Buddhist scriptures even, in the monastic code for monastics, there's a kind of unusual kind of guideline that if the whole community thinks that you are at fault, and you're not at fault, it's best just to admit to it for the sake of harmony. Now, that's very strange, right? And I hopefully that's nuanced and there's different understandings of what that means, you know, why that's going on. But it's kind of an example of how sometimes in certain Buddhist environments, there's an emphasis on harmony is very important and creating in harmony. In other cultures that I know, or groups of people, conflict gets emphasized more. Maybe not as kind of the view that seems most important for people, but in practice, conflict becomes really what gets highlighted in the community or in the people. That if that the first take people have is to be in conflict, me versus you, right versus wrong. I'm going to get my way. There has to be someone who loses. Has to be someone that wins, and I'm going to you know, conflict is the way. And the idea of harmony seems to be not kind of non-existence. You know, someone has to lose, and it's better be you. That's not a very harmonious way. And I get the sense a little bit at times that certain strands of American culture has that emphasis. Sometimes I feel politics has that way, and you know, there's a winner and a loser, and it's very conflict-centered. The idea of finding political harmony is sometimes periodically kind of rears its head and say, we're going to work together. And then people do for about 30 seconds. So the idea of working together is something which, you know, sometimes gets sacrificed when people kind of, the first take is conflict. Recently I was involved in mediating conflict between two people. And we met for, you know, a long time and talked. And one of the very interesting things that arose out of the discussion, out of the exploration with them, is that they both have the same style of dealing with conflict, which is to attack. And so, you know, if you have both people in that kind of mode, then things can flare up very quickly. And that's what happened. And the first one person came to me and said, you don't believe that other person. This person yelled at me. And the other person talked to me. First they talked to me separately. You won't believe what happened to me. This person came to talk to me and this person. And each of them didn't realize the other had yelled until they sat down and talked. And then after a while they realized, it took some talking to realize that both of them had the same style of talking. And because of the same style, it was kind of like, you know, a match and gasoline kind of thing. And when they realized they both had the same style, then they were both able to kind of be much more accepting and forgiving of the other. They kind of diffused the idea there was a conflict or a problem here. It was just, oh, we both contributed, we both kind of had something to do here. And we both have to kind of be careful with our style when we get together. And so they formed the kind of, they talked about it. What can we do together to then to deal with our difference and our kind of mutual styles? And one of the things they agreed to do was to listen to each other. And to listen first. And not only listen, but actually make sure that the other person has been heard. This is what I've heard. You know. And that kind of will diffuse things very quickly. And when you have these kinds of styles, that they stop and listen and say, oh, I understand what you're saying. This is what I understand. Before coming back and saying, you're wrong. That's not what happened. The First Noble Truth that talks about suffering is interpreted by many Buddhists to mean that suffering, there's something about suffering which is always going to be present in human life. Human life is not characterized by suffering in the sense it's not always there, but it's going to rear its head, it's going to show up over and over and over again. And that part of human life is to learn to be wise around the suffering that exists. And I would say the same thing about conflict. We're not going to have human life without conflict. I think it's unrealistic to expect it. I know some people who kind of have this high expectation, kind of utopian ideas of how things should be, and then are horrified when there's some conflict. Like this is some fundamental flaw in human existence or nature or whatever. But I think it's more healthy to kind of assume that conflict is inherent in life and to expect it and to... And then in seeing conflict, then to develop wise ways of being with it. Ways that are conducive towards harmony, conducive towards peace and to well-being. And to kind of discover the possibilities, the wonderful, healthy possibilities that are inherent in conflict. So there's one way, style, which is to focus on harmony at the expense of conflict, of dealing with it. Another style, which is... focuses on conflict at the expense of finding harmony. And I would suggest that the approach towards with Buddhist practice is to look for how to find harmony in the conflict, through the conflict. And it turns out that there's a lot of things, like wonderful things that can happen. Dealing with conflict in a healthy way happens to be one of the fastest ways of creating community, of good relationships with people. I've been amazed at times I've been in conflict and we actually sat down and worked with it and both people kind of sincerely working with the conflict and what's going on, that a sense of mutual understanding arises very quickly and a sense of kind of connectedness or a sense of knowing each other. It's very different. It's kind of intimacy kind of happens. Oh, now I understand you. And there have been people who I've been very had very strained relationships with. Very quickly, when we kind of stop to look at it, things change for the better. Conflict is often two ways. And by stopping and paying attention to conflict, we can learn a lot about ourselves. In this thing I mediated recently, I think at first, at least one of the people really thought the other person was really at fault, you know, really wrong. Bad, you know, and wanted that person fixed. But in talking about it and having this way of talking and exploring it, both people learned how they contributed. Oh, this is my role. This is what I did. And that kind of learning about ourselves and knowing about ourselves is very, very important. Self-growth arises by knowing ourselves and how we are. I believe that there are some myths, or we can talk about them as myths, about conflict, interpersonal conflicts or disagreements and things people have. One myth is that conflict is negative, bad, undesirable, wrong, shouldn't be there. I mean, in a sense, we don't want conflict. I don't want conflict. But I don't think we should see it as being negative, as an unfortunate thing. But we can change our perspective. We can change and see it as something that's positive or useful or beneficial. And I would suggest that it's not inherent in the... I've used the word inherent already. But maybe it's not inherent in the conflict whether it's negative or positive. It really depends on what we choose to do with it, whether it's negative or positive. So it's really up to us. How are we going to relate to this conflict that I have now? Am I going to see it as something which is unfortunate and negative and terrible and be pushed away or avoided or squashed or destroyed? Or do I see it as something that can be used for the mutual benefit of everybody concerned or for my benefit? So it's how we relate to it that makes it negative or positive, not how it is actually is. The second myth around conflict is this idea that someone has to win. And it's about winning and losing. It's a contest. Conflicts are contests. And I would suggest that conflicts are not contests, that conflicts are opportunities to take both people to a new level, to find where the reconciliation is, where the harmony is, where both people find benefit. Where is it both people find common ground, or where both people where are both people nourished and supported in what's going on? And I've seen over and over and over again situations where people have been kind of at heads with each other, and by hanging in there long enough and working with it and being respectful for each other, that actually you can begin finding where the common ground is, or where the mutualities, or how both people are supported in a situation. It's not easy to do that, but it kind of requires both people being interested and willing to hang in there long enough to do it, or maybe even have a mediator to help them do it. But it's certainly possible, and to know that possibility is very inspiring to me. And so, what you find in some of the Buddhist communities in America is, like Spirit Rock and Zen Center, is they've created institutionally forms for the community to deal and help with conflict resolution. But not to try to find that place where everybody is supported. So the Spirit Rock has a document called about ethics. And the first thing it says is, conflicts will inevitably arise within the Spirit Rock community. So that's where it begins. We expect it to happen. The health of our community is not measured by the presence or absence of conflict, as much as by our willingness to find effective, responsible, and compassionate means of resolving interpersonal tensions as they arise. So it's kind of what it's saying is that the health of a community is not the presence or absence of conflict, but whether it's interested in working with those conflicts. That's where the health occurs. The intention to attend to and learn from conflict is a clear application of Buddhist practice into our daily lives. Without this intention, practice can too easily be a comfort rather than a deep transformative vehicle for our lives. Now here is very interesting, I think. Buddhist conflict resolution is not based on good or bad, blame or guilt, winning or losing, or, listen to this, offenders or victims. How many of you have been victims? You don't dare raise your hand now, huh? Isn't that disturbing? To hear that they say there's no offenders and victims? How many are disturbed by that? No one's disturbed by that either? I find it kind of disturbing. And I wrote it. Rather, it is based on fully addressing the suffering of all concerned. Hurt, fear, and anger are taken seriously through forums in which everyone may speak honestly, safely, and completely about their own direct experiences and feelings. In looking for resolution, Buddhist practice values dialogue over silence, reconciliation over estrangement, forgiveness over resentment, confession over accusation, and atonement over punishment. Because the process of reaching such resolution is difficult, often difficult, Spirit Rock has an Ethics and Reconciliation Council for support. Ethics and Reconciliation Council is an acronym, the acronym of that is EAR Council. And because it's supposed to listen, it's supposed to be available as a kind of sounding board for people to come who have problems in the community, and this council will listen to people. So this is the San Francisco Zen Center. It's a document, similar purpose. So Zen Center is about the Bodhisattva path of becoming Bodhisattvas, being of compassionate service to the world, helping the liberation of all beings. As the Bodhisattva path is our heartfelt response to suffering, turning away or skimming over suffering through silence, rationalization, assigning blame, minimizing, feeling self-deprecating guilt, or not listening deeply to its causes and conditions are all steps directly away from the bodhisattva path itself. Furthermore, avoidance is a condition for additional suffering. Thus, when a conflict, grievance, dissonance, or violation of the precepts arises in our interpersonal relationships, it is essential to attend to it fully. Personally, this involves waking up to our own contribution to the suffering in these situations through understanding our reactions, emotions, and attachments. Interpersonally, this involves taking the time to discuss the conflict with the other parties involved in an attempt to clarify the actual causes, conditions, feelings, and responses that come together in the situation. When I was about 20 or so, I went to live on one of the largest of the kind of hippie communes that grows out of the 60s kind of. It was a place called The Farm in Tennessee, and it was 800 people lived there when I was there. And the spiritual teacher of the place was Stephen Gaskin, who came out of Haight-Ashbury kind of thing. And one of his important spiritual teachers was LSD. And when this community settled in Tennessee, at some point they stopped using LSD and marijuana, partly because they got busted for it in Tennessee. Stephen spent a year in jail. And it seems that they kind of tried to find a substitute that was as powerful as LSD for their community. And when I got there, I was blown away by the substitute. And I stayed for a while because of the substitute. You know what it was? No. What?
They sang.
No. Boy, I thought you would guess easily. Speaking the truth. There you go. Speaking the truth was a substitute for LSD. What do you think of that? They found that speaking the truth was as powerful, maybe more powerful. And what blew me away being there, blew my mind when I got there, was they had developed ways of stopping when there was conflict, when there was dissonance or tension between two people, stopping what they were doing and talking about it. And as a community, that was very highly valued. And I was amazed. People would do it in the middle of work, would stop, and sometimes they'd spend a couple hours just kind of talking about what was going on. And what happened if someone was new to the community or whatever, sometimes it would take a long time, a lot of discussion, round and around and around, to clarify and understand what was going on in all parties concerned. But eventually, people learned about themselves enough and about each other, and they learned how to talk and how to be in conflict together and clarify what was going on, not be excessively defensive or excessively offensive, or how to be self-reflective enough, or how to listen to the other person well enough, and develop the skills it takes to resolve conflict. And then as people learn this, the discussions that had to happen, the truth-telling that had to happen, happened faster and faster and faster. To the point that what I saw was sometimes tensions would arise between two people, and they just have to stop and kind of wink at each other. And they'd, oh yeah, I recognize what's going on here. And it was just, okay, we just things. It was that fast sometimes, you know, because they've been doing it. It was a practice. It was their practice to do this. That was their main practice, as far as I could tell. And so imagine that, a whole culture, a whole society, you know, people who had that kind of level of dedication. It's very inefficient to begin with. But in the long term, it's a lot more efficient because you can work things out. So why is it that some people are conflict aversive. Some people are the opposite in an unhealthy way. But why is it that people don't engage in a healthy way with conflict? My guess is that I can guess a few different reasons. Some are more kind of emotional, personal. Fear is one of them. People are afraid. Another is maybe more kind of a personality style that some people are born with. You know, some people are more, into the escape mode, avoidance mode, kind of running away. Don't want to deal with stuff. They're not necessarily afraid. It's just like the first take. You know, okay. I won't notice. And sometimes people, maybe because of a response of anger, hostility is the first thing that arises. And so that things don't work out very well. Hostility is the first approach. So there's certainly personal things, personal reasons. But I think part of the reason people don't have healthy approaches to conflict is a lot of people don't have the skills for working with conflict. And the proposal I like to make is that conflict resolution, conflict, working things out in conflict and tension, is something which is not easy to do. And it's not something that human beings, for the most part, are born knowing how to do. And for the most part, school and culture, school and growing up in families, haven't done a great job in human history in teaching those skills. There certainly are times and places nowadays that people do that, but I think it takes skills. There should be, classes in university, conflict resolution, just like there could be classes in math, because it's something that is learned and developed. Learning how to talk, how to listen, how to do all kinds of things. So developing the skills is very important. And I'd like to suggest that meditation practice or mindfulness practice is not only one of those skills, but opens the doors for a lot of other skills to arise more naturally or easily. That the willingness to be present for discomfort, be present for what is, what's going on. When it's discomfort, be present for discomfort. The willingness to be present that we discover through meditation practice translates directly to the ability then to learn to be present in situations that make us uncomfortable. And that is very powerful. The last few weeks that I've been here, we talked about the value of just being present in a simple way. And tremendous benefit can come with that. Just being present. Nothing has to happen. Just what's happening, just ask, what is happening? What is this? And not to kind of tighten up or contract or resist. Just have the ability to stay present when things are uncomfortable. The story I like to tell, I apologize for repeating myself. I was teaching a retreat once, and I set up a extra interview with someone. And it was at a certain time, 3 o'clock in the afternoon or something. And that evening I was supposed to give the Dharma talk. And I got lost in preparing for my Dharma talk. And I forgot about the interview until 4 o'clock, I think, or so, a little before. And then I was, this person's been waiting for me. So I went and found the person. Now, on retreats, nothing happens, right? People meditate. Well, it isn't like they have to go somewhere, It's like, an appointment or, And nothing's happening except they're meditating. And they can meditate but... So, I hadn't shown up for the interview, but it wasn't like she had to go anywhere. Or anything had to happen, right? Except you pay attention to what is happening. But she was furious with me. Boy, was she furious. And so I said, okay, we should talk. So we went back to this room. And I sat down like this on the floor, and she sat opposite me. I think it was like 4:30 by that time. And she started in on me. Boy, was she furious, telling me whatever she needed to tell me. And I sat there, and after a while, I got very curious. And I wondered, how long can someone carry on a monologue? And so I just sat there, it's just, just like the wind going through, this is interesting. I kind of nodded, I was present, I kind of showed that I was present, I was paying attention. I wasn't like, just blowing her off, but inside, I thought, this is amazing, this is interesting. And it didn't stick anywhere inside, just like. And finally, at, I think 5:30, because it was an hour long, after an hour, at the retreat, they rang the bell for supper. And you know, so there's a saying in Buddhist circles: saved by the bell. And so I said, "Oh, that's the bell. That means I have to go to the next thing." So excuse me. So I left, and the next day she came to me and she said, "Gil, that was fantastic." You're the first person who hasn't been afraid of my anger. I've never had that experience before. And it helped her lighten up the hold or the grip that she held on her anger. It was kind of like I held it for her in a healthy way so that, you know, she could see that it was possible to hold in a different way. And for her, the kind of person she was, her being in an attack mode only escalated depending on people responding in unuseful ways. If people ran away, it escalated. If they attacked her, it escalated. But to have someone do neither of them showed her a different way that she could be with her conflict. So learning to be present for discomfort, you know, and learning to track one's own reactions and learn to let go of the ones which are not helpful or meet with others, I think is very helpful. Another one that we learn through practice, I believe, I think it comes almost just with practice, is a sense of goodwill for other people. A sense of concern and compassion for them. And, you know, the win-lose kind of scenario has no room for compassion, I think. Goodwill for the other person. Is it possible to find the solution? Is it possible to find the reconciliation, the resolution, where you understand the person you're in conflict with and understand their suffering, understand what's going on for them? So it's not just about your suffering, but it's also about theirs. And can you also be concerned about that, their welfare also, your own welfare and their welfare? And so Buddhism, there's a lot of emphasis on developing goodwill and having goodwill for others. And goodwill does not mean you love them in the kind of Western usual way we love. Love is too high a standard. If someone's really, you know, hostile to you, loving them might not be the right kind of thing to have. But it's possible to have goodwill towards them. It's possible to wish them well, to be concerned about their well-being, to stop and pay attention, to listen deeply. What's in their hearts? And what is it? What's the possibility in their hearts? What's their suffering that's causing this? Some people have said, all acts of hostility represent someone in pain. So, you know, to listen to that pain in that person rather than react only to your pain and blow the other person off. So, in meditation, it's possible to discover something that in Buddhism is called the great happiness, Mahasukha. The great happiness when there's no conflict, inner conflict, when the mind is at ease, at peace in a very deep way, when the mind is not for or against anything, not trying to do anything except rest at peace with itself. It's considered to be the greatest form of happiness when that's possible. I think one of the reasons why conflict can make us happy is when we understand that conflict is a door towards finding that place of not being in conflict, of being at peace in our social relationships with the people around us. And when our relationships with people around us are at peace, are settled, at peace with themselves, at rest, it's a form of great happiness. It's really great. It's a really wonderful thing. I hope that our community here, IMC, that I hope there's no conflict here. That would be great. But if there is conflict, which I expect, I hope it's kind of in the open. I hope we're willing to stop for it and talk about it and work with it. And it might be very awkward. It might take us, you know, weeks, you know, first. But like on the farm, the experience in the commune, right? At first it took a long time. But as you get better on it, it takes shorter and shorter time, less and less time. And someday, when we have conflict at IMC, we just wink at each other. Wouldn't that be great? So I hope that IMC is a place that is not conflict-free, exactly, but rather a place where we are dedicated towards stopping and paying attention and having a healthy approach to conflicts that exist, tensions that exist. So those are my thoughts for today. I hope it made you happy. So thank you all very much.